Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't stepped on your locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3, Raymond Parts the Third.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Virginia on the left wing with Hunter. He rips. He drives right. Puts it up off the glass. He got it. Virginia back in front. 76-75.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is Raymond Parse III, your host for the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting, as always, live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You give us a call today on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We have a jam-packed show for you lined up today. First of all, y'all make sure to be safe out there. The weather is kicking up. Lots of lightning, lots of rain, lots of wind. So y'all be safe out there on your morning commute. Don't rush it. You know what? It's okay. If you're a few minutes late to work, it's okay. Just take your time. Cody Schutz is on the ones and twos, as always. And we do have a jam-packed show for you today. We got Raging Cajuns, softball, baseball, and LSU baseball to talk about today. We got the mess that is the Alliance, the now-defunct Spring Football League. Some more information came out yesterday. Some very good reporting came out on how employees were treated, how the players were treated after the league folded, and some pretty a PR nightmare, so to speak, for the Alliance of American Football. That is now no more. We'll dive deeper into that. We'll also talk our favorite WrestleMania memories with our good friend Brady Amon. We'll have Andrew Lopez on in the third hour breaking down the Pels. They lost again, but what maybe the future holds for the New Orleans franchise with only three games remaining in this season. So we'll get Lopes' perspective on that. We'll talk to James Yasko, co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast. Astros lost again last night. Now, they're not the only big-name franchise and perennial contender that has started off the season struggling. So is the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Braves and the Cubs. But we'll talk to James, hopefully give us some insight on what's going wrong with the Houston Astros right now. And we'll have our good friend John Marques from the Town Talk on thetowntalk.com coming up talking a little bit about the Final Four. But that's where we're going to begin. We started off on Tuesday previewing the Final Four. We started off with Texas Tech. Yesterday, it was Michigan State. Now we're on the other side of the bracket, the other semifinal matchup, and we're going to start off with Virginia, the lone one seed left in the tournament. Now, we all know that the Cavs last year became the first number one seed in NCAA tournament history to lose to a 16 seed. They had to carry that with them. The knock on head coach Tony Bennett, who, by the way, was named the National Coach of the Year last year and had to accept that award at the Final Four in San Antonio after being eliminated by a 16 seed, was that this team couldn't make a deep run, that their defense, which is known for slowing down the pace of the game and can be frustrating to watch, that their brand of basketball was not built for the NCAA tournament, that they could win regular season ACC titles, and that they could beat Duke during the regular season and beat North Carolina during the regular season, but that their style of basketball just did not line up with what it took to make a run in the NCAA tournament. Well, Tony Bennett and Virginia has proved everyone wrong. They finally broke through this year. It reminds me of the same knock that was on Jay Wright at Villanova. Remember, Villanova would be the one seed or the two seed, and they'd always get upset in the first weekend of the tournament or in the Sweet 16, and they always would underperform. Well, now, fast forward 4 years later, and we're talking about Jay Wright as one of the best coaches in all college basketball and a two-time national champion. These things happen. You have to go through these growing pains, and it feels very much like this is Virginia's year to kind of break through. They're in the Final Four for the first time since 1984. And let's talk about that defense, because Auburn, their opponent on Saturday, loves to run up and down the court. They love jacking up threes. It's all about high-octane offense, lots of intensity. Bruce Pearl's yelling the entire time. This is what Virginia, though, does. Their defense is so suffocating that their whole goal is to slow you down. They hold teams to 28.7% from three. That's how good they are defensively on the perimeter. That they force teams to shoot less than 29% from three-point range. A team like Auburn that lives and dies by the three, that helped them mow down the Blue Bloods in this tournament, including North Carolina and Kentucky, to get to the Final Four, that's going to be key on Saturday. That's what Virginia loves to do. They're great at defense. They stifle their opponents. They slow down the pace of the game. And look, the complaint is valid. Sometimes it is tough to watch Virginia Cavaliers basketball. It is, oh, that Virginia-Oregon game earlier in the tournament was brutal. Absolutely brutal. But it works for them. This is what works for Virginia. They're so good defensively, and they're good at not turning over the ball themselves. Virginia ranks 11th in the nation in turnovers. Okay? They rarely turn over the ball. They're the 11th best team in the nation in that category. So they got the shutdown defense. They've been tested. They were tested by Oregon in this tournament. They were tested by Purdue. They needed overtime to beat Purdue. You just heard the highlight to start off the show. And that was a sensational play, one of the craziest finishes to a Elite Eight game in regulation. Free throws miss. Rebound gets pushed back into the backcourt. They get the ball, throw it in there. Game tying. Put back. And then they won the game in overtime. So they were pushed by Purdue already. They were already pushed by Oregon, the kind of surprise team of this NCAA tournament as a 12 seed advancing to the Sweet 16. But Virginia plays in the ACC, and they've played the likes of Duke, and they've played the likes of North Carolina. It feels like it's this their year. But also, not only are they known about their defense and how they're so disciplined and not turning over the ball, they may have the best backcourt left of all four of the teams in the NCAA tournament. Kyle Guy, he shoots 42% from three-point range. He's averaging a team-high 15.2 points per game. DeAndre Hunter, who you heard in the highlight, who's a possible lottery pick. He's at least going to be a first-rounder. He may not be a lottery pick, but he's going to be close to being one. He also shoots 42% from three-point range. And then Ty Jerome averages 13 points and 5 assists. So you got a three-headed monster in that backcourt for Virginia. The game is going to come down to if Auburn can shoot the three. That's what it's going to boil down to. Can Auburn play the pace that they want to play and jack up those three-pointers? If Auburn can get hot and kind of break Virginia's defense – they can win this game. But if Virginia keeps them under 30% from three and doesn't turn over the ball, there's no way that Auburn's going to be able to beat them. That's the key to the game right there, because Virginia's backcourt is just that good, and they're very disciplined. And those guys in the backcourt, they also play really good defense. So not only do you have guys that can jack up threes themselves, they're good at playing defense. They like playing defense. I know that's crazy to hear in modern basketball, guys liking to play defense. But that's why Auburn. Auburn's on the magical ride, okay, led by Bruce Pearl. They're going to be, you know, they're trying to crash a party. That's what they're trying to do. Virginia is the stoic team, right? Bruce Pearl is bombastic, and Auburn is the story of late here in the tournament. And then there's Virginia. Not sexy. The style of play is not enthralling by any stretch of the imagination, but it works for them, and it gets the job done for them. Virginia's going to come with their defense. Auburn's going to have to figure out a way to break that defense and drain threes, and that's going to be a challenge. And on the top of it, Auburn, who's a pretty good defensive team, is going to have to figure out how to slow down that tremendous backcourt. But it just feels like this is Virginia. Look, they already broke through, kind of got the monkey off the back, right? They embraced them being the first one seed that lost to a 16 seed. Give credit to Tony Bennett last year. He had to go out there and answer questions from reporters over and over again. Do you realize how much gumption or guts it took to go and accept the Coach of the Year award after your team became the first team in NCAA history to lose as a one seed to a 16? And he did it. And a lot of those guys came back from that last year's team that got upset in the first round and was embarrassed. And they had all the doubters this year. Well, Virginia's no good. Virginia can't make a run. They're going to lose again in the tournament. That's what they always do. That's what Tony Bennett and his team do. They play that awful defense that's awful to watch, and they're just going to lose in the first round again. They've broken through. They got tested, but they broke through. They're to the Final Four for the first time since 1984. But I just feel like there's still work to be done for this Virginia team. I don't think they're done. And as hot as Auburn has been, and it's hard to argue against beating the likes of Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky in one NCAA tournament. I mean, come on. And who's hotter than Auburn? They also marched right through the SEC tournament as well, knocking off Tennessee in the championship game. They're in Nashville. But Auburn has not faced a defense quite as good as the Cavs defense. So we'll see. I still say I'd give the advantage to Virginia. I think Bruce Pearl and Tony Bennett are comparable coaches, what they bring to the table. I just think Virginia's defense is going to frustrate Auburn just enough for them to edge out and get that victory and advance to the national championship game. Well, that takes care of three of the Final Four teams this week here on the Wrap Game with RP3. We will wrap things up tomorrow with our Final Four previews when we talk Bruce Pearl and the Auburn Tigers. When we come back here, Naz Reid made a decision. He's bound for the NBA. Also, reports say that Tony Benford, interim head coach, he may be bound for Texas A&M. We'll dive into both of those topics right here on 103.7 The Game.
Here's Waters. Nice pass. No way. No way. Naz Reid.
Is about Naz Reid. At 6'10", you shouldn't have to do this. And at 6'10", you shouldn't be able to do this. Where there's a will, there's a way. Nice play.
Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsha III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Well, what the news that we all expected to occur yesterday, in fact, did occur. Naz Reid, the freshman forward sensation for LSU, who developed quite nicely throughout the season, helping the Tigers advance to their first Sweet 16 since 2006, officially declared for the NBA draft. He wrote in a post on the Gram, because that's what the kids call it nowadays, Cody. It's not Instagram. They just call it the Gram, correct?
Thanks. See, I'm always like, yeah, on IG. So
I'm so out of it.
I'm so far out of the loop. I don't even
so
know.
So far out. Yeah. Oh.
It's lit, though. That I do know.
Reid announced on his Instagram page, quote, "I will be entering the NBA draft with an agent in hopes of finally fulfilling a dream I believe is my destiny." Okay. "I cannot imagine doing anything else, and again, would not be in this position without all of you and everyone who has ever believed in and supported me. Thank you to my LSU family for welcoming me with open arms. Once a Tiger, always a Tiger."
Well, that answered the one question I had about the situation. Was had he gotten an agent, had he done that whole deal, or was he going about it kind of in the Tremont Waters way? But no, it sounds
right,
like
where you go to like the combine, but right. You can still.
But no,
come
it sounds like
school.
he is dove, whichever one it is, head first into the NBA here. So good luck to the kid, and I still send him support.
He'll be a first round pick.
I send him support, like he said. Am I as confident for his success in the NBA as it was in college immediately like that? Obviously not. But do I still have loads of support for this kid? Yeah, I'll be rooting him on.
He needs some work. He's going to be a first-round pick because of his potential.
And he's not afraid. He's not soft, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
He's not soft. He has developed a little bit of an outside shot. He still needs some grooming. He still needs some coaching.
In the NBA, you stay away from that three-point line, Nas. You hear me? You go under, you put your butt under the hoop, and you be the big man. If they see you jacking up threes in the NBA, I don't think they're going to take too kindly to that.
On those flat-footed threes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
There's no vertical on that. There's nothing on that, man. He earned all SEC freshman honors this past year after he averaged nearly 14 points, 7 rebounds, and about 27 minutes per game. He also won freshman of the week honors when he pulled down 21 points and 10 rebounds, averaged that versus Mississippi State and Auburn. Before the season even began, LSU coach Will Wade told reporters that the Asbury Park, New Jersey native wouldn't be around long. So they knew that this is a guy that was going to be a one-and-done for them. He came in. It was at times rough early on. I talked about it here on the show that he didn't – when you watched him play, he struggled with playing inside of his body. Like, he's still very much kind of like a baby in that way. Like, he's learning how to play, like learning how to walk. Okay, he hasn't really figured out – it got better as the season progressed, but he hasn't figured out – just how good he can really be. Now, he's going to need some coaching. He's going to need some developing. I think he probably needs to get a little bit bigger and stronger. Maybe add on about maybe 5 to 7 pounds of muscle. The NBA will get him on some nutritional program and beef him up. He has talent, though. He developed a little bit of a mid-range jumper. Not a great one, but a little bit of one. There were times throughout the season that Cavell Bigby-Williams did the dirty stuff better. Now, that could be just because Cavell was a veteran, a senior.
Right.
You know, you never thought Cavell was afraid. Okay? There were times early in the season where Nas was a little hesitant. I don't want to say afraid. I think that's too strong of a word. It was just...
unsure.
A little unsure of himself and his ability to get the rebounds and to get the block shots. As the season progressed, though, and we talked about it with people that have covered the team like Ron Higgins or even Sheldon Mickles before, and they've even told us that you could tell that Cavell kind of took Nas under his wing and kind of mentored him throughout the season. And the Naz Reid that took the court there at the SEC tournament and in the NCAA tournament was a far more efficient and dominant player than the one that took the court early in the year. So the sky is the limit. NBADraft.net, they have their latest mock draft. And they have Reid as a first-round pick going 25 overall to the Portland Trailblazers.
Do they have like a little blurb about him, kind of how they have in the NFL draft about Naj Reid? Is that a thing?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. Well, I was just wondering because I was going to point out, to me, I think the biggest flaw or weakness in Naj Reid's game as we watched it in college is on the defensive end. He's got all the talent in the world offensively. He can, like you said, I don't think he should be taking three-pointers in the NBA, but he can. We've seen him hit threes. We know he's a big body. He's athletic. He can be underneath the rim.
He's got a terrific wingspan.
But his defense is very lacking. I mean, he left his feet to try to block shots that were never taken more than he actually tried to block shots that were. And to me, that's a problem. Now, it can be coached up, but that to me is just a glaring weakness in Naj Reid's game.
But how many guys in the NBA now play defense?
I mean, fair play, fair play.
And I agree with you. You would like to see him be more of a force on the defensive end because of his wingspan and his body type.
And I think LSU fans still remember guys like Jordan Mickey, who were just rim protectors extraordinaire and just swatted everything that came close. You know, so it's one. And then he's on the court with a guy like Tremont Waters, who is his antithesis in build to Naj Reid, but, I mean, was getting steals left and right. So, I mean, is defense going to cost him or bump him out of the first round? No, that's not what I'm trying to say.
He's going to be a first-round pick.
He's got some work to do.
Naj is the classic type of guy that has immense amount of potential, and he has the size that they're looking for. And they'll take him all day long, okay? He'll be a first-round pick. He's not going to be a lottery pick, but he'll be a first-round pick. But he's going to have to work at sticking in the league and developing. Okay, if he continues to make the progress that he did this season, as the season went along, if he continues to have that same mindset, he'll be just fine. He'll stick in this league for quite a long time. The problem with these guys, 9 times out of 10, is that they put in the work to get to be a first-round pick or a lottery pick, and then once they get to the association, they lose a little something.
Put championships aside and all that in the NBA. Do you think Naj Reid could have a better career than Glenn Big Baby Davis?
Ooh, I think he has the potential.
There you go.
Big Baby always struggled with weight. That was another issue for Big Baby.
They're different players, obviously.
Different skill set, yeah.
Right, but I don't know. It's another big man that's recently come out of LSU, just a thought.
Also, came out yesterday, multiple reports have Tony Benford, stint as LSU's assistant coach and interim head coach, appears to be over. He is reportedly leaving Baton Rouge to be an assistant on new Texas A&M coach Buzz Williams' staff. That's been multiple reports. So, that A&M-LSU rivalry, it may have a little extra juice going to it now in other sports as well. We'll talk more about the reports about Tony Benford leaving, going to Texas A&M, Naj Reid's decision, as well as this weekend's Final Four with our next guest, John Marcase. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline right now and welcome on our first guest. He is a senior featured columnist for the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com. It's our good friend, John Marcase. John, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, Ray. How about you?
Doing well, doing well, doing well. Now, I will get to the fact that you're feeling overjoyed with the fact that your head coach of your favorite team got a huge contract extension. We'll get to that. But I want
to
start off
to the grave.
I want to start off with the news that came out of Baton Rouge yesterday, John. Twofold. Naj Reid, we kind of expected this, the freshman forward, all SEC freshman team honoree. Naj Reid announced that he has declared for the NBA draft and that he's got himself an agent. He's going to be a projected first-round draft pick. Also the same day, though, Tony Benford, the interim coach and the assistant coach for the LSU men's basketball team, reports came out that he's joining Buzz Williams' staff at Texas A&M. Your thoughts on both of those news items?
We'll start with Benford. I mean, there's I mean, he's probably reading the tea leaves that Will Wade's not coming back. And if Will Wade's not coming back, then he's going to be out. Ventra's going to be out of a job. So that's one part. Second part is he's already worked for Buzz Williams before, I believe, at Marquette as an assistant coach. So all Buzz is doing is getting the band back together, and Benford spent, what was it, 4 or 5 years at North Texas replacing Johnny Jones. So he knows Texas, and, it's just a logical move to move over to College Station. And he's probably going to get a pay raise as well because I know from reports they're paying Buzz at least, what, $3 million a year to be the head coach. So you figure the assistant coaches are also going to be making more than they were at LSU. So that doesn't surprise me, and neither does Naz Reid. I mean, anybody that saw what he can do, I mean, he's a presence inside, and he can step out and hit the three-pointer. Hitting three-pointers is almost as important as height in the NBA these days. So not really surprised by either decision.
What do you think about Naz Reid? He's projected as a first-round draft pick, John. And, mm-hmm. and you said, we saw his potential, and I spoke about it earlier on the show, that he progressed nicely as the season went along. I think Cavell Bigby-Williams had a big impact on him, mentoring him, and he kind of learned how to play in that body of his and kind of figured out how he could dominate a game. He's still raw in a lot of ways. He still needs some work and some coaching. What are some of the things that you think an NBA franchise is going to have to do to develop him and making him into a legitimate guy at the next level?
It's just going to be that mid-range game that has sort of disappeared from the NBA, which, you just don't know how consistent is he going to be from NBA three-point range. It is farther. And can he be a consistent back-to-the-basket scorer? Those are the two things that really probably just the inside presence. And, he doesn't have to go into the NBA and have to average 17 points a game for have a good career. If he can go in and average, 7-8 rebounds, 10 points a game, he can play for a long time in the NBA. And it's he's going to need to probably add some weight, some muscle, like everyone does, except for probably Zion coming out to really fit in. Because, if you haven't been to an NBA game in person, you just don't realize the size of the athletes that you're talking about. It's quite impressive, the leap from college to the pro level. But, first-round pick, you got to go these days. The money's just too great.
We're talking with John Marques of the Town Talk and thetowntalk.com. John, let's stay in the SEC. The announcement, Buzz Williams is leaving Virginia Tech. He helped turn around the Hokies program in 5 years. He helped lead them to the Sweet 16 just this year. And before then, he had a tremendous run there at Marquette, getting to the NCAA tournament 5 times in 6 seasons, including 3 Sweet 16s and 1 Elite 8 run back in 2013. But as you mentioned, Williams is a native of Texas, and he earned his master's degree from A&M. Do you think Buzz Williams is going to be a good fit? And what do you think that's going to do with the LSU-Texas A&M rivalry that's kind of building up through football?
Well, he's just a great fit. And, I think 2 years ago I advocated LSU should hire Buzz Williams after they fired Johnny Jones. And instead, Joe Oliva sort of pulled Will Wade out of thin air, surprised everybody. He chose a yet to go the young guy route, who had never spent more than 2 years as a head coach at any school, so he had never built a program. I don't think anybody predicted this was going to happen, and I'm not saying Will Wade's a bad coach. He's obviously not. He knows what he's doing. But when you're talking about Buzz Williams, what he did at Marquette and what he did at Virginia Tech, back-to-back Sweet 16s that had never happened in school history at Virginia Tech, and that may be the most difficult job in the ACC, just located in Blacksburg, Virginia. It's not, it's not the University of Virginia. It's not North Carolina, Duke. He's a great coach. He's got ties to Louisiana. He spent a couple of years as an assistant coach at Northwestern State. He spent 1 year as a head coach at New Orleans. Obviously, the Texas roots, to me, that was a no-brainer. LSU should have opened the wallet, pay for him and hire him 2 years ago, and he would have had the Louisiana connections, he would have had the Texas connections for the recruiting. It just sounded like a win-win situation. But alas, we know that Joe Oliva's coaching searches aren't obviously the most common sense coaching searches in the world. And now Texas A&M has got them one of the best coaches in the SEC coming in. You know, can he fully tap into that Houston market? Looks like Kelvin Sampson's going to stay at Houston and not go to Arkansas. If that holds true, that's going to be a nice recruiting war between those two to get all the recruits out of Houston. So, you know, I expect, you know, Billy Kennedy had success at A&M. He didn't have it consistent. I expect that to become consistent success now at A&M. I mean, they've got great facilities. They've got a great school. And they're located in a just vast potential of recruits from Dallas to Houston. I mean, it seems like it should be a win-win situation.
John, speaking of coaches, your guy John Calipari agreed to a lifetime contract with Kentucky. A lot of reports have it that, you know, he flirted around with UCLA, and that's what prompted this lifetime contract deal. Was reported he was offered a 6-year, $48 million deal from UCLA. But now he's going to be locked up with the Wildcats. And a lot of people were upset by this and have been critical of John and the fact that he's only won one national championship in his tenure there. And I don't see that. I don't see it that way. I see a guy that has made it to the Final Four 4 times, and he's won one national championship in his 10 years as a coach. They're always in the mix. They're always in the mix to get to the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. He gets the best guys to come there in this one-and-done era. He sends the most guys to the NBA. There's a lot of great things that have been going on. College basketball has changed. It's not what it used to be, where coaches could win multiple championships in a decade's time. I know Jay Wright's done it recently, but even Coach K has had issues here in the past decade of not getting to Final Fours. But yet, John Calipari is the one that's getting kind of reamed for getting this lifetime contract. You're a diehard Kentucky fan, but you're also a respected sports journalist. How do you fare on this?
The way I look at it is, if you want to know his impact, he made Mike Krzyzewski and Duke change their approach. I mean, they went from the 4-year players to all of a sudden Krzyzewski's become the king of the one and done. I mean, he truly has. You look at the last 4 years. You know, the thing that I look at with Calipari and I look at with the Kentucky program, I've been a fan since the mid-70s. I was born in Kentucky. I wanted to be different growing up in Louisiana, so I started rooting for Kentucky. And Kentucky's been playing basketball now for about 110, 111 years, and they've only won 8 national titles. I say only 8, yes, the second most in, you know, among all programs. So that's about one every, I don't know, 15, 16 years. I'm not good on my quick math this morning real quick. But when you look at that, he's won one national title in 10 years. Well, that's still pretty good. Before he came in, you know, Kentucky basketball had slid to the point where it was coming close to being irrelevant if it hadn't already. The program was starting to decline under Tubby Smith. Billy Gillespie was a mistake all the way around. Unfortunately, they fired him after 2 years, which needed to be done. And since Calipari was hired, Kentucky basketball has been relevant again if it hadn't been the top topic in college basketball. I mean, and for most of the 10 years, when you thought college basketball, you thought immediately Kentucky. Lately, I know this past year, it was Duke and Zion. You know, that's immeasurable. That's all Kentucky fans really want is – when you talk about college basketball, you're talking about the University of Kentucky. I mean, go ask UCLA fans how great it is to have the most national titles in college basketball history, because nobody's talking about them except you're about to hire Jamie Dixon as your head coach. I mean, you know, and that's just the situation it is. And then you look at what Calipari's done. You know, 4 Final Fours, 1 national title. He's been to the Elite Eight 7 times, which to me is the place you want to go, because you can't win a national title unless you make it to the Final Four, and the Elite Eight is the place you want to be. It's more than Izzo. It's more than Krzyzewski during that time. you know, he's had, yeah, they've gotten some, they've had a couple of bad losses in the NCAA tournament, but they've also had some unexpected runs where they've been in the Final Four. And believe it or not, if you've really watched Kentucky basketball closely the last couple of years, he's starting to tweak his recruiting model. It's not so much all the one-and-doners. He's now getting players like P.J. Washington who came back for a second year, and I think you're going to see some more of his players come back for a second year because guess what the NBA is about to do? They're about to open up the high school pipeline again. So, you know, I see him sort of evolving his recruiting tactics, and that's something to be to watch as we move forward.
Talking to John Marques of the Town Talk on thetowntalk.com. John, let's talk about this weekend's slate of games, Final Four in Minneapolis. We have two very intriguing matchups to me. On one side of the bracket, it's Texas Tech making their first Final Four appearance versus Michigan State and Tom Izzo, who appear to be just an absolute machine in this tournament. On the other side, it's Auburn, who inexplicably marched to the SEC tournament title and then took down three Blue Bloods in Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky to get to its first Final Four with the man with more baggage than anyone, Bruce Pearl. They're going to take on Virginia, who finally broke through and got to their first Final Four since 1984 and put those memories of losing to a 16 seed last season behind them. Of the two matchups, which one is more intriguing to you, and who do you have advancing to the national championship game on Monday?
I think Auburn-Virginia is the most intriguing matchup. Is Virginia going to have their pace of play where it's slowed down, or is Auburn going to be able to get them to play where they score in the 80s or the 90s? Just that pace of play is going to be intriguing to watch. And, you know, I think the first time you had me on back in January, we were talking about SEC. You were asking me the teams to watch, and I told you the SEC at that point had two Final Four teams. It was Tennessee and it was Auburn. You know, Auburn had some injuries. They, you know, they had a major injury in the Sweet 16, but their guards are really, really good, and they're really fast. And if Auburn's hitting their three-pointers, you know, they can beat any team in the country. That matchup really intrigues me. You know, and they got the hot team right now. Will it run out in Minneapolis when they now have to go to a dome stadium? You just don't know. Virginia, I know they win a lot. They just don't impress you. But, you know, I think they're the only losses they've really had have been to, what, Duke this year, about twice. So, you know, I think that game's going to be the most intriguing to watch. And, you know, Texas Tech is one of those teams that's just flown on the radar, but they play really outstanding defense. So, you know, I really see this just being an even Final Four, and I don't know if I can even pick who I think is going to make it to the finals. But I think you're right. I think Michigan State is probably going to be the favorite going into the games.
John, appreciate you coming on, making time for us, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week and enjoy watching the games this weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ray. I'll talk to you later.
John Marques, Town Talk and thetowntalk.com, joining us, talking a little LSU basketball, SEC, and NCAA Final Four. When we come back, we will wrap up the first hour of the Rap Game with RP3, talking Raging Cajun softball, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Terrific conversation to start off the show. We gave our Final Four preview on the Virginia Cavaliers. Then we talked about Naz Reid's decision to declare for the NBA draft. Reports of Tony Benford, interim head coach for the LSU men's basketball team, leaving to join Buzz Williams' staff there at Texas A&M. And we talked all that and more with our good friend John Marques. But let's touch on college softball. One of the best college softball programs in the entire country is right here in our own backyard.
Right. I was about to say premier college softball.
Oh, yeah. And they avenged an earlier setback last night. They went on the road to play McNeese State. Now, you remember the Cowgirls upset the Raging Cajuns at Lampson in an extra inning affair just like a week and a half ago, or last week, rather. And I think it was like 4-3. And head coach Jerry Glasgow, who we talked to on the program yesterday, he said that they weren't having, you know, revenge on their mind, that they have, you know, they got bigger goals, that they can't be, you know, being bogged down with thinking about revenge. But they went in there, the 10th ranked team in the country, the Raging Cajuns went to Joe Miller Field in Lake Charles and took care of business. They avenged that 5-4 setback. I apologize. It was 5-4 back on March 20th. That was also the last time the Cajuns lost a game. They blanked McNeese last night 4-0 to avenge that earlier loss. Their current win streak now is 7 games. The Raging Cajuns got on the scoreboard first. They got 3 runs on 2 hits in the top half of the first inning. Sack fly off the bat of Bailey Curry, and then Lexi Como had an RBI ground out, and then Alicia Dalton had a run-scoring single to grab a quick 3-0 lead. Sarah Huddick blasted a solo home run shot, her 8th of the season in last night's game. That gave them the 4-0 lead, and that's really all they needed to take care of business, because Summer Ellison, who we keep talking about, and I'm going to tell you guys, we're going to keep talking about this young woman because she is a dominant pitcher, okay? She's going to compete for Pitcher of the Year honors and Player of the Year honors in the Sun Belt Conference. She's going to compete for All-American honors this year. I'm telling you, she's that good this year. She was good last year. She's even better this time around. She's now 21-4 on this season after she tossed a one-hit shutout over 5 innings while striking out 9. That's efficient. That's what we call very efficient. Caroline Settle suffered the loss for McNeese State. With the victory, the Cajuns are now 30-4 overall on the season. They return to the Diamond right here in Lafayette this weekend when they host the UTA Mavericks 3-game weekend Sun Belt Conference Series. So you got to make sure to head out to Lampson Park this weekend and get to see Summer Ellison and the rest of the Raging Cajuns softball team. Top 10 in the nation, ladies and gentlemen. Got to go check them out. Friday night's game versus UT Arlington will be at 6, and then Saturday will be at 2, and the rubber match will be at 1 on Sunday. If you don't catch them this weekend, you can also catch them next week when they'll be playing a midweek game versus Southeastern. The Raging Cajuns softball team, they just keep rolling right along, keep racking up those wins. Summer Ellison, she's going to flirt with setting that program record for most wins in a season, which I do believe is 45. She's going to come close. It all depends on how long of a postseason run the Raging Cajuns produce. But they looks like they have the talent. It looks like they've come together as a team, and Jerry Glasgow and his staff, bravo to them, because they've done a terrific job with this program right here in our own backyard. First hour is in the books. Second hour, we're going to start it off strong from the top turnbuckle. Brady Amon is going to join us for some old school wrestling talk, our favorite WrestleMania memories, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't Sexual on your locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3, Raymond Parks III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Old school wrestling talk with the tag team duo of RP3 and Brady.
Oh, hell yeah!
Ray is the former Demolition Fan Club president, Southeast Chapter.
The Demolition, walking disaster.
and the innovator of a devastating move called the Gator Lock. Brady is the 10-time Willow Street Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champion. And he once shook hands with One Man Gang. Time for some old school wrestling talk. Now I got trophies and rings. This is the victory.
Welcome to the second hour of the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Ladies and gentlemen, it's WrestleMania week. Mania will be occurring on Sunday, so it seemed like a perfect time. What better time than now to bring on our good friend for some old school wrestling talk, the one and only, Brady Amon. Brady, how are you this morning, and how have you been, brother?
I've been great. I'm good this morning. I feel like I should be up with the Red Rooster with Terry Taylor. This is early hour. Is this in the second hour? You know, Terry Taylor seems like a guy that was probably an early riser, don't you think? He seems like that guy that would be up at 4:30 in the morning, starting his day already.
Yes.
You know, guys like Mick Foley's probably still sleeping, but this guy's going at it. Yeah, I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Doing great, man. Doing great. Just gearing up for WrestleMania week. So thought it'd be a perfect time to have you on to kind of share your favorite WrestleMania memories. And there's, you know, been so many of them. It is the Super Bowl of sports entertainment. Creation of Vince McMahon's, which has kind of lasted on, and it changed everything with how pro wrestling was digested by the masses and how it was accepted. It made it made wrestling common, right? It made it a household. It made it part of pop culture. WrestleMania helped make wrestling part of pop culture forever.
Yeah, I mean, it brought it into the mainstream, like you said. It wasn't, you know, wrestling when, you know, we were growing up was largely a territorial thing and largely, you know, you had to be a wrestling fan to know anything about it or know anything about the wrestlers. And then when WrestleMania hit, like you said, it just became a worldwide event where that one weekend, everybody was kind of wrestling. It's like you said, it's the Super Bowl of wrestling. You know, you had WrestleMania watch parties. I know I did. I had WrestleMania watch parties, you know, probably for 20 years. I think it's, you know, 3 years ago is probably the last time I had one. But up until then, I had them every year consecutively. It was something that it just vaulted wrestling into the national, the worldwide spotlight. It was something that every year, you know, you could look forward to that first weekend in April. That big event was coming. And now, obviously, pay-per-views have kind of gone wild since then. Now there's one pretty much every month. So, and it was all because, you know, they were able to have that success early on. If they would have never had the WrestleMania success, you know, you kind of wonder whether or not they'd be able to have these monthly pay-per-views.
Brady, how many WrestleManias have you actually watched in person, if any?
Live? None, honestly. I wish I would have gone to the, you know, we had two New Orleans ones that I wanted to go to really bad, and you know, I remember when the New Orleans, the last, not this one, but the first New Orleans show, when it went on sale, they go on sale a year ahead of time, obviously. They sell out really quickly. I really wanted to. I was actually on Ticketmaster. I was getting ready to buy them. And then I just like, you know, I don't know, man. I just couldn't pull the trigger. And then there was one in Detroit that my cousin went to at the Silverdome, and he wanted me to go with him, and I didn't get to go. But I mean, I watched a lot of them, obviously, on pay-per-view, but never live. I've heard it's an amazing experience. It's sort of like being at Raw, except it's kind of amplified because it's, you know, 4 hours, 4.5, 5 hours of pure entertainment, and it's nonstop. So,
I do believe Cody Schutz want to interject here and just brag a little bit to you there, Brady.
Not even brag, Brady, but I have been to two WrestleManias in person.
Wow.
I'm bummed. I missed WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans. The first time it came around, that was when Daniel Bryan won both belts. And,
yeah.
You saw, you know, 80,000 people doing the whole yes thing at one time. WWE uses that clip everywhere. That was in the Superdome. I missed that. I made it to the second WrestleMania in New Orleans, which was just last year. That main event was not known for its yes chance, but for beach balls being thrown around in the crowd during the main event. So I was there for that. But my first WrestleMania was WrestleMania 32 when it was in Dallas at Jerry's World, when they claimed over 100,000 people were in the building and everything. And that was probably the better experience, even in New Orleans, was in Dallas. But I want to point out, Brady, you said, you know, WrestleMania is kind of like Raw, except it's 4 hours now. The card for WrestleMania this year has, I believe, 17 matches on it and is expected to last 6.5 to 7 hours.
Wow.
And that's not, and that's, there's a pre-show and everything that starts before
that. There's a pre-show, exactly.
So hunker down this Sunday, wrestling fans.
it really has become an all-day thing. And I remember, you know, my friend Herman Fusilier and I, we watch it every year, and we always alternate between houses. And it was, you know, it used to start, I guess, I want to say like around 5:30 or 6, you'd show up and, you know, you'd have snacks or whatever. And then, like you said, now it's getting to the point where you got to show up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, start watching the pre-show, especially if you haven't been watching Raw or SmackDown. You want to catch up on all the storylines, because they do that for the first, you know, first hour or so. They catch up on all those storylines. So, I mean, it's definitely an all-day event now. And, I mean, I wish I would have pulled the trigger when I had the chance to go to one live, because I think it would have been definitely a you know, one of the once-in-a-lifetime experiences. Or three times in a lifetime, if you could.
Nice. Nice. Let's get right to it, brother. WrestleMania, once again, will be... But before we get to our favorite memories, what are your thoughts of, for the first time in WrestleMania history, the main event is a women's match, and it's a three-way women's match. Your thoughts on that?
Man, I knew you were going to ask me this question. I mean, I'm not a big fan of it, honestly. It's just because I just feel like they've pushed Ronda Rousey really fast, and I get that she has a lot of appeal and everything. I just don't, you know, when you got so many other great superstars, you know, I just have a hard time with it. But I mean, I have a feeling it's going to be a good match. It'll probably be entertaining. I just, man, most of the time the diva matches, to me, they're just very boring. That's just my personal opinion. I don't mind the divas at all. I don't mind them being in the organization. I just find that sometimes those matches are very bad. And, but we'll see. I mean, maybe it'll
well, Brady, just, Brady, turn out to be would it make you feel any better about what's going to occur on Sunday if I told you that Ronda is expected to lose the match and lose the belt? Will that make you feel any better? And by the way, Brady, just so that you're on the PC train with us, it's not the Divas. It's not that there is. It's no longer the Divas title, my friend. It's the Women's Championship.
Yeah, just Divas.
No,
you just got your privilege checked there, Brady.
Ronda's not a diva, but it'll make me feel a little bit better. Yeah, you know.
Okay. All right.
You're about to dive into some of your older WrestleMania memories that you have. Those WrestleMania memories for me, I can't really call them memories, because those are manias that I've gone and watched back in the last 5 years. See, I didn't watch all those manias when I was young or growing up or even when they were going on. I've had to retroactively go back since the network.
I got you.
And watch those manias. So for me, my favorite WrestleMania memory is something much more recent. It was from WrestleMania 32. When I was in Dallas, it was my first Mania ever. John Cena was not on the card. It was very similar to this year. Cena was not on the card. John Cena was basically, they were trying to make it seem like he's not going to be there, which is what they're doing this year. The Rock was kind of the big, you know, host of the show and this and that and whatnot. And he had come out earlier in the show and did his thing. He comes out later in the show and he starts getting, you know, bombarded by the Wyatt family, which is basically at this point, it's 3-on-1, 4-on-1. And I'm sitting here and I'm grabbing Dylan. And I'm shaking him ferociously, saying, "The Rock is outnumbered. The Rock is outnumbered. He needs help. He needs help." And wouldn't you know it, rapido, John Cena's music drops. Dylan looks to his left. I'm no longer in my seat. I had an aisle seat. I hit the aisle and ran up the steps. I don't know where the hell I was going. But, I mean, I was running like a five-year-old child just to see John Cena at WrestleMania. Of course, we got the five-knuckle shuffle. We got the FU. We got the whole nine yards. The Rock bottom. The people's elbow. It was incredible. My favorite WrestleMania moment, bar none. Now I need to take a breath.
Nice.
I thought you were going to say you were going down to the ring to help Rock.
We were in like the 300 sections. That's a long jump, Brady. I don't know how to make it.
It took you a while.
It's a bit of a haul. It was a bit of a haul. That's a terrific memory, Cody. I've never been to, like you, Brady, I've never been to WrestleMania, but I did watch plenty of them growing up. So I'd be interested to see what your top five favorite WrestleMania memories are. If you got an honorable mention, you can throw that in there too. But you go ahead first. You're up first, brother.
All right. So I'll give you a couple honorable mentions just because it's basically matches. WrestleMania 18, Hogan versus Rock, Icon versus Icon. It was a terrible match. I mean, as far as, you know, technicality or whatever. But it was one of those super matches you love seeing, you know, two of the top wrestlers in the promotion fighting each other. Thought it was great. And then WrestleMania 24, Ric Flair and HBK. Other than that match, the pay-per-view wasn't really that great. But that one moment where HBK hits Ric Flair with the Sweet Chin Music and then pins him, and then they both cry together afterwards. I thought that was just a great raw emotional moment. Now, getting down to my top five WrestleMania moments, I'm going by WrestleManias because there's, like I said, there's some that have really good matches, and there's some that have just a whole great card. Number five, WrestleMania 14. To me, that was the beginning of Stone Cold's reign. If you remember, he beat Shawn Michaels. That was that frantic finish where he ducked the Sweet Chin Music. Then he tried to stun him, then came off the ropes, ducked another Sweet Chin Music. I mean, it was one of those really fast finishes. Stone Cold pins him. That pretty much ushered in Stone Cold's era. Also, that was the beginning of the Attitude Era, D-Generation X and all those guys. WrestleMania 14. That was my number five. Number four is WrestleMania 22. The feature one was the hardcore match between Mick Foley and Edge. Foley's one of my favorite workers. That's a guy that he'll do whatever you ask of him. And in that match, they lit a table on fire and speared him through it. So one of those iconic moments from Mick Foley, WrestleMania 22. In the middle, this will be a little bit of a surprise for some people, but WrestleMania 3, I have that one right there in the middle. Obviously, that's the one that I feel like put WrestleMania over on the map. That's the Hogan versus Andre match. On that card, one of the best matches that not a lot of people talk about is Steamboat versus Savage. I know we've talked about it a few times.
Yeah.
That was a very, very good match that nearly stole the show. Obviously, Hogan and Andre is the one that everybody remembers from that WrestleMania 3. But all in all, that was a really good card. And like I said, that was the one that I think vaulted WrestleMania up into the everybody's minds. Number two, WrestleMania 25. You had Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker in that street match. You also had the Money in the Bank ladder match with CM Punk. I thought that the Taker and Michaels match was the best match, and then after that it kind of went downhill. But that Taker and Michaels match was amazing. And I don't know if you remember that match, or you probably do. It was just one of those grueling matches that you just thought the Undertaker might actually lose, and then he ends up winning it, keeps the streak going. WrestleMania 17, I feel like this is the best WrestleMania ever. Stone Cold versus The Rock, Taker versus Triple H, the table ladder chair match, the hardcore match between Shane and Vince when Shane goes from post to post and does the drop kick on Vince with the trash can. That was one of those WrestleManias where I never left my seat. Every single match was great. It was just one of those, I think, like I said, the best WrestleMania. I'd say WrestleMania 17 is actually WrestleMania X7, but whatever. That's my number one.
Oh, I didn't want to call you out, Brady. I'm sitting over here, X7, X7. Attaboy.
I like to use, see, I'm like, you know, I don't go with the old Super Bowl LI, you know, Super Bowl LII. I like to just say what it is. It's a numerical thing. Let's go with it.
It's a numerical thing.
I like that. I have a couple honorable mentions as well. One of my favorite tag team matches in WrestleMania history was the Hart Foundation versus the Nasty Boys.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorites. I also liked the British Bulldogs when they took on Brutus the Barber, Beefcake, and Greg Valentine, and Ozzy Osbourne showed up. I think that was WrestleMania 2. When they had all the separate sites, Brady, they had like him at three separate sites. That was a bit crazy. And also another one of my favorite honorable mentions, just because I wanted to get Papa Shango onto the list somehow, was when the Ultimate Warrior came out of nowhere. He was supposed to be out of the company, and he comes out and saves Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 8 from being tag teamed and beat up by Papa Shango and Sid Justice.
Yeah.
That was, you know, and the Warrior, and that led to the speculation of, is that really the Ultimate Warrior? Is that an imposter? Is he still alive? Like, that was the whole thing. I remember thinking, going, is that the real guy? Is that him? So, yeah, those are some honorable mentions. We could spend all day long on honorable mentions. Number five for me, though, is the Shawn Michaels versus Ric Flair at WrestleMania 24. It was probably one of the more emotional matches I ever watched. And you mentioned it before you gave him the sweet chin music. I still remember it. I can still see it in my head. Shawn Michaels looking up at Flair and going, I'm sorry, I love you. And then doing that. And that was just, like, phenomenal. I never seen anything like that, just the emotion. And Michaels always brought that for his entire career. He's one of the best that to ever do it. So that's number five for me, Michaels versus Flair at WrestleMania 24. Number four for me is another Shawn Michaels match. You mentioned it. WrestleMania, that would have been 26, Michaels versus The Undertaker. That was Shawn Michaels, I guess, retirement match. That was part of the Undertaker streak. I love that match at number four. Number three for me, I'm going to go back, Ultimate Warrior versus Hulk Hogan, Intercontinental Champion versus World Champion. And everyone thought Hogan was going to beat the Warrior, but that was the first time that McMahon tried to dethrone Hogan as the face of the company. It didn't work. It worked a little bit, but it didn't work. But I remember that was an epic thing. Two good guys, the two biggest stars in the WWF, going at it, putting both titles on the line. I still remember that. And it, once again, neither one was the greatest technician of wrestling, but for entertainment purposes, it was a huge deal for me. Number two for me is WrestleMania 1. Without it, there's nothing else. That one, you got Mr. T, you got Cyndi Lauper, you had Muhammad Ali involved, you had Hogan. It was the granddaddy of them all, so to speak. And my favorite WrestleMania memory is, you mentioned it as well, Brady, WrestleMania 3, when Hogan slammed Andre the Giant. That is the pinnacle of the WWF in the 80s. It's what helped wrestling get to the stratosphere. That WrestleMania in that moment with Hogan slamming the Giant there in the Pontiac there in Detroit, Michigan. That's what I remember. That was the one that still stands out to me. Your thoughts?
No, I agree. That list is, I had WrestleMania 1 on there, and then I just started looking at the overall matches, and I just, like I said, I had to go with something a little. You know, one thing I noticed when I was looking at the WrestleManias is that, man, it got really stale between 3 and, like, 13, 14. It just got really stale, and then it really picked up a lot after that. And I think it was because that Vince was trying to recycle a lot of storylines, because he did another Hogan versus Andre match. He did, you know, obviously the Mega Powers he had. And that was one. That was another moment that I remembered, when Hogan and Savage, teamed up, and when they fought each other. So there's just been a lot of great WrestleMania. It was hard to narrow it down.
I agree, brother.
Just because there's so many good memories and moments. There wasn't a lot of... There was some that was there were not overall good WrestleManias from start to finish, but there were a lot of good moments in it.
And one last tidbit for me, I want to give a big shout out to, I believe it was Kathy Lee Crosby was her name. She was a kind of guest commentator for WrestleMania 2, who constantly asked Gorilla Monsoon the entire time, "How much does this guy weigh, Gorilla? How much does he weigh, Gorilla? Man, look at the size of this guy. How much does he?" She had nothing to add to the broadcast. She just asked how much guys weighed for like 6 hours. It was the best. Shout out to you, Kathy.
And poor Gorilla Monsoon, the late
Gorilla. He hated it so much. He hated it.
He's like, really?
Get away from my microphone.
Brady, appreciate you coming on, brother. Enjoy WrestleMania this Sunday, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Yeah, looking forward to it, Ray. Take care.
That's going to do it for this edition of Old School Wrestling Talk. When we come back, we'll talk the mess that has become the Alliance of American Football, right here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. Real quick, I just want to touch on the AAF. Reports came out yesterday, just flooding, starting with Darren Revelle, that AAF players also had to find and pay for their own flights home after the league folded. Darren said, total and complete garbage way to treat people. Other people, a Rich Ornberger, said more on the collapse. Players in Memphis, for example, came back to their hotels after news came down that the league had folded and had their personal items waiting for them in the lobby. They were kicked out of their lodgings. Also, amount of money owed to vendors and venues, etc., in San Antonio for training camp, the bill is still over $4 million. Also, reserve injured players, quote, will be left in the cold. They will be paying for their own rehab and medical expenses. High-level staff at the team level received an email, quote, from the board, end quote, that no one received a termination notice from an actual person. It was a mass email that was sent out. Team level, this is the other thing that kills me. Team level staff members were also asked to stay behind in certain markets to help clean out office spaces without pay and handle quote unquote refunds. No clarity who will be receiving said refunds. This is a complete mess.
It's leading more and more to my black helicopter that Vince McMahon is behind all of this.
The termination letter sent to all the AAF staff, no one signed the letter. It was sent from a generic company email address with no signature line.
AAF@gmail.com.
Just like.
You're fired.
How could you possibly? This is how they ran this league.
Oh, my goodness.
I still love you, Memphis Express. Still love you.
How did your Memphis Express swag surge go yesterday?
Live on there in between breaks, I tried to go online to buy Christmas gifts for the fellas here at 103.7 The Game. I was going to buy discounted Memphis Express swag specifically for Ben Love because he trolled the Alliance so hard. I couldn't even, when you go to the shop, it wouldn't load. The page was down.
Shut it down.
For not only the Memphis Express, but for the Alliance. They're like, well, I'll just shut that down. No one's going to want to buy this. So now I'm going to have to buy it aftermarket on the back of a truck somewhere.
Dang it.
Flea market. But it's coming. You can count on that. So, yeah, Alliance mess from start to finish. There will be more from that, I can guarantee you. When we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, we're going to talk to our good buddy James Yasko of the Lima Time podcast. He's going to try to tell us what the hell is going on with the Houston Astros, who lost again last night to the Texas Rangers. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're having a jam-packed killer show for you already here live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our third guest, but he could be our best. I have a feeling that he's going to bring his A game, unlike the Houston Astros have been doing so far this season. We're going to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on the co-host of the Lima Time podcast, the one and only James Yasko. James, how are you this morning, my friend?
Hey, I'm okay. How are you doing?
Doing well. Let's just get right to it, brother. What the hell is going on with the Houston Astros? I know it's early. Verlander sets the tone in the opener last week against the artist formerly known as the Devil Rays. And you're like, hey, boom. And they hit a bunch of home runs and Springer and Altuve. And then they get roughed up the rest of the way by the Rays, lose that series. And then they just lost a series to the Rangers. So what's going on with Houston right now, man?
Yeah, if you told me that the Astros would tag the freaking reigning Cy Young winner, Blake Snell, and then go 1-5 the next six games, like I would have you arrested. Like that's just it makes no sense. But the Astros offense doesn't really make a whole lot of sense right now either. So what they were pretty good at the last few years is stringing together hits, and they are just not getting that right now. The biggest, I guess the most glaring stat that pops out is they're like 4-for-42 with runners in scoring position. That is terrible, but it's also unsustainable. So I think it's a blip, I'm trying not to get in fights I live a little bit closer to Ranger to Dallas than I do to Houston. And I've got a reputation to uphold here, and the Astros are not helping me out, and I do not appreciate it one bit.
So So we need to get AJ on the phone and be like, look, man, you're making our boy James's life a little bit more difficult than it needs to be.
Yeah, I'm getting roasted like daily, and I do not like it at all.
It's still early in the season, obviously, James, and this is a weird thing that's going on right now, right? Because it's just not the Astros, a perennial contender, a team that people think can make a run back to the World Series. It's all the other teams that people think can make a run to the World Series, too, that have started off very weak and poor. The Atlanta Braves have struggled out of the gates. The Yankees lost to the Orioles. They've struggled. The Red Sox have struggled. I can't remember the last time that all the best teams in Major League Baseball, the perennial contenders to hoist the World Series championship, all began the season so poorly.
Yeah, and I don't know that there's anything – I don't know that there's really anything to it. You know, I think with your – and I'm just – I haven't really thought a whole lot about this, but you make a really good point. I don't know if the contenders know, like, hey – obviously everyone wants to get off to a good start. But if the contenders are looking at this like, okay, we got 6 months left. You know, there's 155 games if you're the Astros left to play. It's a grind, you know, winning every game in April, while it would be nice, isn't the most important thing. Let's get our timing down. Let's get our injuries taken care of. Whereas the teams that shouldn't be winning series against the Yankees, like Baltimore and Detroit, you know, they want to come out and they're trying to make a statement. And so I think for teams like the Astros, Red Sox, and Yankees, you know, their statement has already been made. And maybe maybe they're taking a longer view of the season. Whereas, you know, those teams that you look to think would be, you know, 20, 30 games out by the end of the season, they just want to go out and show something. So maybe there's something to that. I think the Yankees are in the worst shape just because of the number of injuries that they're dealing with. The Red Sox and Astros just kind of crap the bed to start the season.
Yeah, and just to further that point, here's your division leaders this early in the season. And once again, we're only, what, 7 games in here, James, so we're going to have a little fun at these teams' expenses because no one thinks that these teams are going to be, even at the All-Star break, even remotely near this. But your AL East leaders, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. Central, mm-hmm. the Twins. The West is the Mariners. Okay, with the Astros way down the list there. Over in the National League, the Mets are leading the NL East. The Brewers in the Central, the Dodgers, which we kind of expected in the West. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the Cubs are 1-4 right now. Even the Cardinals, who are supposed to be returning back to form after getting Goldschmidt in that extension, they're 3-3. So it's still early, small sample size, but tell me this. What have you liked that you've seen? I know they've lost a lot of games. Is there anything that you've liked that you've seen from the Astros so far?
I think seeing Correa hit balls really hard, you know, that's certainly encouraging. And anybody who thinks that Correa is no good, that he's fragile, that he's just dying to get out of Houston already, like, come fight me. Like, I will absolutely drop you because Correa is an elite player. Who very clearly was dealing with a bad back last season that looks like it's been fixed. So seeing Correa come out of the gate swinging the bat hard, I think that's good. I think seeing the Astros more aggressive stealing bases, I think that's they just hit into so many double plays last year that I like the shift in strategy. They're going to get hit. They just haven't gotten the big one yet. So seeing how aggressive they are, seeing Correa hit the ball hard, and then seeing, you know, Ryan Pressly and Roberto Osuna come out and just do their thing, the bullpen has been really solid. So, you know, they're 2-5. They're, you know, but imagine if they get, let's say they're hitting 250 with runners in scoring position. That's 6 more hits with, you know, 6 to 8 more runs that you're looking at, and that 2-5 might be 4-3. Maybe even 5-2. So it's going to come. It's going to be fine. It's frustrating, but I'm not in panic mode yet.
What did you think about Verlander's performance in the opener? He was lights out. the other day, not so much. What do you think about him so far?
He's going to be okay. I mean, you know, there was what that, he doesn't have many bad starts, but there was that one game last year, I think, that he was playing against Detroit, and Detroit was like 120 games under 500 at that point. And he gave up like four home runs, and he's proven that he is still, you know, a great starter, an elite starter, one of the, what do you think, top 10 to 15 starters in the league. It's okay to have a rough one, you know, every now and then. Am I happy that it came against the Rangers? No, but otherwise, you know, not that big of a deal. I will say this, if that was his first start of the season, and he was struggling with his command like that, it's a little bit, there might be a little bit more cause for concern, but given how he dealt against Tampa, he's going to be fine.
We're on with James Yasko, co-host of the Limited Time Time podcast. The Houston Astros get back to work tomorrow night. They'll be there at Minute Maid for their first home series of the season when they welcome on the Oakland Athletics. You can listen to that game live right here on our sister station, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM Lafayette, also 104.1 in Lake Charles on the rewind. James, let's switch off from the Astros. Let's talk a little Houston Rockets, if you don't mind. There were a lot of question marks about the Rockets to start the season. They looked, let's just be honest, they looked terrible. It looked like Carmelo Anthony had done something to that team. They lost their best defenders. And as the season has progressed, they've gotten better. A big part of that, obviously, is James Harden playing at an MVP-like level. What do you like about the Rockets heading into this postseason coming up, and what are you concerned about?
I will answer this question with the caveat that I am a very casual Rockets fan. I grew up in Houston. I like the Rockets. But I don't pay attention to the Rockets nearly anywhere like I do. I probably pay attention to Astros minor league teams more than I do the Rockets. But I can be conversational. I think them getting healthy at this time of year is ideal. You know, they struggled with Chris Paul being out, they were a Chris Paul hamstring away from possibly taking that series against the Warriors. So with everyone healthy, with Harden being established, it should hopefully turn into a pretty fun spring for the Rockets.
Well, let me ask you this, James. Down there, who dominates? Who's the main thing? I mean, I know you're a diehard Astros fan, but who dominates there? Is it, you know, is it equal Texans, Rockets, Stros, or are the Stros the main event, or who is it?
That's a great. It feels like I think the Texans still dominate. I mean, the Texans can go 1-15, and the Astros rattle off, you know, 10 wins in a row, and still somebody's going to call into sports radio wanting to talk about who they might pick in the third round of the NFL draft. And so it's probably the Texans followed, and I'd say the Astros and Rockets kind of turn equally. But I do think the Astros and Rockets are more respected as organizations than the Texans are, just because of the recent success and some of the moves that the front office has made. You're not seeing that from the Texans front office. So I think just because of it's Texas and it's the South and it's football, the Texans are going to, and they play, you know, a lot fewer games. That sort of dominates Houston sports media's attention and sports fans' attention, but the Rockets and Astros are right there behind them.
James, wrap it up with this, brother, and go back to the diamond. What do you think the window is for this club? Because they got their young core locked up, right? They got Altuve, they got Bregman. They got their young core, their pieces there. The pitching staff is older. Verlander's not going to be able to pitch at a high level forever. So what do you think the real window is for that? Because there's a lot of talk coming out of Chicago that the front office believes if they can't turn things around this season by the midway part, that they're going to start tearing down, that they feel like that window is already closing. The Astros are very similarly built and ran. What do you think the window is for the Stros?
I honestly think that the Astros are going to they're going to win as many World Series as they possibly can through 2022. And the way that the Astros are built is, yeah, you might lose Gerrit Cole to free agency at the end of the season, but you've got Forrest Whitley, you know, right there.
Right.
You might lose Michael Brantley after next season, but you've got Kyle Tucker right there. The Astros are built in waves, and I think that's what's encouraging. It's not like a situation where this is their shot. You know, once, and especially with extending Verlander a couple of years, they have Correa under control through 2022. Bregman and Altuve are locked up long term. We'll see what happens with Springer, but the Astros are built for a longer window than probably the Cubs are, and that's a credit to the Astros front office.
James, I appreciate you making some time for us as always. Tell us when is the next podcast drop, and where can people go get it?
It might be tonight. I think Pat and I are mad enough that we might throw a bonus episode out tonight, but Sunday for sure will be the next episode.
A bonus episode because your life's being threatened. I like that. You can be the whole thing.
We just need to get some voodoo dolls and you know, so the ashes of a virgin. I don't know where we'd get virgin ashes, but we got to do something to get something turned around.
James, appreciate you, brother. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, sounds good. Thanks.
James Yasko, co-host of the Lima Time podcast, the number one rated podcast for Houston Astros. We will wrap up the second hour of the Rap Game with RP3, talking a little Raging Cajuns baseball talk when we come back here on 103.7 The Game. Closing out the second hour of the Rap Game with RP3 with your host here, Raymond Parts III, on 103.7 The Game. Cody Schutz, man in the ones and twos, right here, live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Just a reminder, we will have a very special exclusive concert announcement coming Friday morning at 7:20 right here on 103.7 The Game. So make sure to tune in tomorrow. Once again, very special exclusive concert announcement coming Friday morning at 7:20.
And don't at me, because I don't know what it is either.
I had someone, I made the announcement yesterday.
Don't at
someone
me.
Texted me, a buddy of mine. He's like, hey man, what's, can you tell me what's going on? I was like, no.
No.
I'm like, no. Tune in tomorrow for the show, and we'll tell you then. It's very simple. It's not very simple. Just tune in tomorrow, okay?
Hey, before you talk, isn't there like a golf thing going on?
Oh, there he is. I signed up yesterday. I picked my winner.
Who'd you pick?
I picked my winner. I'll get to it first. Let me see. Okay. Just a reminder, it's still not too late. Look, the Masters is next weekend. Starts Thursday through Sunday there in lovely Augusta, Georgia. Jim Nantz will be on the call. They'll talk about azaleas because why not? You can take the Masters Challenge. The only thing you got to do, guys, is just go to the 103.7 The Game webpage. Just click on the link for the 2019 Masters Challenge. That's all you got to do. And you can get a chance to win a $100 gift card from golfballs.com. It's that easy. You just sign up, pick the golfer that you think will win the 2019 Masters. Everyone in the field is listed. Real simple. You just click, boom, you're done. If the winning golfer is selected by more than one entry, we will put all correct entries in a raffle and then select a winner. Real easy to get a $100 gift card from golfballs.com, guys. You should do it.
I mean, it's right there on the homepage, and you can log in with your Facebook as well. So it's not even like you got to go and type out all these crazy. Click log in through Facebook, click agree, and pick your winner. $100 to golfballs.com could be yours.
That's right. I went with the Englishman.
Rory?
Oh, no. Timeout.
Or is he Scottish?
He's Irish.
He's Irish. He's the other one.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Yeah, make sure. That's like when, remember this, Cody.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be careful with those kind of things. It's like when Craig Parks comes into the studio.
Let me correct myself.
You don't call him Australian.
No. But
because,
I know
Craig. Because Craig will fight you.
I know Craig Parks personally, though. That's different. I've never met Rory McIlroy in my life. That's I know Craig Parks. Like, we shake hands once a week every, you know what I mean? But the UK is a confusing place. Is Scotland still part of that?
I know, yes.
There's a weird thing where Scotland, like, made its own individual.
There's
nation.
A movement yeah. to but have anyways, Scotland be removed, yes.
Regardless, go pick your winner for the Masters, 1037thegame.com.
That's right. I picked the Englishman, Tommy Fleetwood.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fleetwood Mac fame. Go your own way, Ray. Go your own way.
Yes, it's Mick Fleetwood's grandson. We'll just go with that. That's
you
why
know,
I
Lindsay,
picked it.
Lindsay Buckingham used to hang out in the studio all the time. Every Wednesday, Lindsay Buckingham sat in that chair right there for What Up With That. He brought a special guest every week, too. I miss those guys. Lindsay B. LB, where are you at, man? Hadn't seen you in a while.
Oh, nice, nice. So, yeah, make sure to go to the 103.7 The Game webpage and sign up. Look, a $100 gift card can go a long way, especially if you play golf like I do. I play it poorly is what I'm trying to tell you is I am terrible.
Even if you don't play poorly, if you play like I do, for fun, it's a good deal.
Hey, look, even to this, just go sign up. Take your chance. If you win the $100 gift card, you don't even play golf. It could be a great gift. Father's Day is coming right up around the corner.
Ooh, look at you, Ray.
Okay, birthdays. I'm just saying.
Hey.
Stock that away. I've taken stuff that I've won before and given it away as gifts. Okay, just saying.
I won some Pat Green tickets when I was younger. I was like 14, 15 years old. All I knew was Wave on Wave. That was the only Pat Green song I knew. And I won tickets on a radio call-in, and I was like, hey, Mom, Dad, look. Enjoy this Pat Green concert you're going to go to. It was also at like a casino. I was like 14 years old. What am I going to do?
Nice. Yes, Rory McIlroy is from Ireland.
Ireland.
So,
okay.
Yes. Yes. So don't say that. Yeah. Don't call him an Englishman.
Call him to his face. I'll tell you. You know what? You're not even an Englishman, Rory. You're a Welshman. You don't even look like you're from England. From Wales.
Speaking of people that got some fight in them, Raging Cajuns baseball team. Oh. They have now won 3 straight, ladies and gentlemen. They've been having some woes. They took down Southeastern Louisiana on a back-to-back. They had to play in back-to-back nights. They won the other night. Then last night, it was a little bit difficult, but they edged out, came away with the 9-8 victory on the road there in Hammond to sweep the season series from the Lions. Blake Schultz got the win. He's now 3-1 on the year. And Gunnar Leger came in for his second save of the season. The game featured 4 different lead changes and 5 innings with multiple runs scored. But UL, Tony Robichaud's bunch, win number 901, by the way, in counting, there with the Raging Cajuns. They pulled it out, the victory. They snagged away the 9-8 win. They had a big 5-run inning. Was pivotal in the victory. They're now 15-16 overall, 4-5 still in conference play. Okay, Tremaine Spears had a big game as the DH. He went 3-for-5, including a 2-run homer to right center, and he had 3 RBIs. Todd Lott, who we've talked about, had another tremendous game. His now hitting streak is up to 13 games as he had 2 hits in 4 at-bats last night. Raging Cajuns return back to action. They're going to build on this momentum of the 3-game winning streak, hopefully, into this weekend's 3-game series there at the Teague versus Arkansas State Sun Belt play. So we'll see if they can keep it going and get above 500 overall and in Sun Belt play this weekend. Second hour in the books. Third hour up next. LSU baseball talk right here on the Wrap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set
for like locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts the Third.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
He's got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Payoff.
handoff delivery on its way. A little check swing, slow bouncer to third. Actually, the shortstop, Montillo, will throw to first. Duplantis beats it out. Coming in to score is Beloso. It's 1-0 Tigers. He says he takes a beating each and every night out there and has done an excellent job. Here's a breaking ball that gets away from Aberrett again, and Chris Reed down the way comes in from third to score the second run of the ball game. It's 2-0 Tigers.
Good morning, Acadiana. Welcome to the third and final hour of the Wrap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Hope you guys out there are being safe. I know the weather's bad. Lots of wind, lots of rain. Y'all be safe out there during your morning commutes. We've talked about plenty today on the show. We started off giving off our third of four Final Four previews. We focused in on the Virginia Cavaliers this morning. We talked about Naz Reid's decision to head to the NBA. He gone. Going to be a first-round draft pick. Also about Tony Benford leaving. All reports are that he's going to join his good friend Buzz Williams at Texas A&M. We talked with John Marques about the Final Four and about the moves in the SEC. We touched on the Raging Cajun softball team avenging last week's loss to McNeese State last night with a shutout performance. Summer Ellison got herself another win, leads the nation in that category. We stroll down memory lane with our good friend Brady Amon, our favorite WrestleMania memories. Not only myself and Brady, but Cody Schuch joined in as well, who's the only one of the three that's actually been to a WrestleMania, and he's been to two. Hashtag humblebrag.
Little bit.
We touched on the mess that is the fallout of the Alliance of American Football, folding operations, caught up with our good buddy James Yasko about the struggles of the Houston Astros, and ended the second hour with Raging Cajuns baseball getting their third straight victory and sweeping the season series from the Lions of Southeastern Louisiana. But the third hour, we're going to start off with LSU. You heard the highlights there. The voice of the LSU Tigers in front of the show, Chris Blair, was on the call last night for LSU's midweek makeup game versus the Jaguars of South Alabama. Those two clips were the highlights.
That's all I got for you, man.
Okay. It was, they scored in back-to-back innings for the 2-0 victory over South Alabama there at Alex Box Stadium. Look, they put up a bunch of runs and rolled Grambling State the night before. This is a makeup game. You typically don't play those games back-to-back. The Cajuns had to do the same thing. The reason why the Cajuns had to play Southeastern back-to-back, that's not scheduled. That was a makeup game, okay? So they had to play back-to-back to get it done. Same thing here. But they got the win. That's all that matters for LSU in this regard. They got the victory over a very game South Alabama team. Chris Blair talked about this on the show yesterday, Cody, where he said competition's going to be a lot better tonight, and South Alabama is a program that is not going to be intimidated and that they are going to come and fight tooth and nail with LSU. And sure enough, South Al's pitching staff gave LSU everything it could handle last night there at Alex Box Stadium. But the Tigers do improve to 21-9 overall on the season. And the shutout was the second in 2 days after they blanked Grambling 9-0 there on Tuesday. So you like seeing that from your pitching staff. It's the first consecutive shutouts for LSU in back-to-back games since the 2017 SEC tournament when the Tigers blew out Kentucky and South Carolina 10-0 and 11-0. LSU does return to action Friday night at 7 with the first game of their weekend series against Texas A&M.
A comparably ranked Texas A&M team as well. In the five polls, LSU and A&M are within two or three spots in every one of them.
So another terrific contest. The SEC schedule, we talked about this earlier in the week, for LSU baseball team is front-loaded with the level of competition. I mean, they've had to play at Georgia, ranked in the top 10. They had to play at Mississippi State, ranked in the top 3. Now they're hosting Texas A&M, ranked in the top 10. Okay? Everything is front-loaded in that SEC schedule this year
if you take Kentucky out of that, and you might as well just take Kentucky baseball out of that equation. But yes, LSU will return to action on Friday when they begin the three-game stand against Texas A&M. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. Loved what I saw last night, though, from Mikhail Hilliard, the sophomore righty. He was such a good plug-in guy last year as a true freshman on the bump for the Tigers. He got banged up. He got injured. They were slowed with his recovery. They've paced him to come back. Very similar to what they've done with Eric Walker. Walker's injury was far more severe, obviously. Not as severe as Hilliard's, but they brought alone Mikhail nicely, and he pitched three perfect innings as the starter and recorded five strikeouts. So that's what you like to see. You know, you want Hilliard to pitch well in these midweek, kind of, I call them rehab starts, essentially. He's going to get the work. He's going to build up his strength. And then you can have him for the stretch run of SEC play in the SEC tournament, and that gives you another quality starter. So, loved what I saw from him. Trent Wittmeyer, he improved to 2-0. He's 2-0. He is the sophomore righty. He tossed two relief innings to pick up the win. He allowed only three hits and recorded a strikeout to end the seventh inning. Matthew Beck, he's had an up-and-down career there with LSU, Cody. I think that'd be safe to say, the middle reliever.
And it's like he comes out and he's dominant, and then he's all over the place.
He's just not consistent. That
it's exactly what I'm saying, but I like a guy that, I don't know, Aroldis Chapman is way too big of a comparison for him, but a hard thrower, a Kyle Farnsworth type, if you will, out there throwing 99 miles an hour. But when you're in the batter's box, don't dig in too deep.
Right. So Beck gave you two innings, only allowed one hit and a walk. Todd Peterson pitched one inning, and Devin Fontenot earned his second save of the season by working a scoreless ninth with a strikeout. So if we've talked about pitching being an issue for LSU, yes, it's the midweek games. I understand it's against the likes of Grambling and South Alabama. I understand that. But you have to like what you see from your guys, where it was pitcher by committee last night in a tight ball game, and your guys pitched beautifully. Okay? And these middle relievers are building up their confidence, and you're getting confidence back in Hilliard, who's trying to return to the form that he showcased last year as a true freshman. This is what Paul Maneri had to say afterwards. The pitching has certainly been a highlight for us over the past 2 days. He's not wrong. Usually Paul is not wrong. He's definitely not wrong here. He went on to say, quote, "We're pretty thin right now because of some injuries and that arm soreness that's plaguing them. And to go out there and throw two straight shutouts in the middle of the week is significant. South Alabama scored 15 runs last night against a very good Southern Miss team. So we knew they had some firepower. Honestly, we couldn't have mapped it out any better than it went tonight." I agree with that. You get your bottom of the rotation guys and you get your bullpen and your middle relievers to pitch the way they did the last 2 days. Has to give you a huge boost of confidence that you can depend on those guys in a pinch over a weekend series if one of your starters struggles. That's what you're looking for here. You're also looking for Hilliard to possibly be that fourth guy that you can maybe count on if one of your weekend starters gets banged up or can't quite rise to the occasion. Hey, first run of the game came in the bottom of the seventh inning. And who was it courtesy of?
Best player on the team.
Oh, there it is. Right fielder Antoine Duplantis, the pride of Lafayette High, the former Mighty Lion. Rolled an infield base to score. Designated hitter Cade Beloso from third base to give LSU that 1-0 lead. That's all they would need. They would add it again with the wild pitch in the eighth that plated Chris Reed. And Duplantis hit a single to center in the third and then hit an infield single in that seventh inning that we talked about. His career hits total is now 308.
There you go.
308. He stands fifth on the LSU career's hit list right now and is only two shy of tying. Here's a blast from the past and one of the best players ever to play for LSU, Todd Walker.
Okay, Todd. Okay. I was going to say Brad Cressy. Todd Walker.
Walker for fourth place.
Can I pose something to you? Because
riddle me this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, by all means.
we're very hyped, like Paul Maneri said, and you said he wasn't wrong. The LSU pitching staff has been stellar over the last, man, almost since SEC play has started, almost. But very good recently, couple shutouts here back-to-back. They shut down Mississippi State in the final two games of that series. But with the bats last night, does that bother you? I know we always try to look at the positive things. The pitching staff was great. If you give up zero runs, you're going to win every game. That's a fact. But you still have to, they only scored two runs. They didn't score their first one until the seventh inning on an infield single, and their second run came on a wild pitch.
I do not, and this is why.
Yeah.
Because it's a back-to-back in the middle of the week.
Heard that.
Okay. They rolled up. They had no problem scoring runs against Grambling.
No. That was fine. It was with 9-0 or something like that.
Right. So they had no problems there. It's just, you look at any college baseball team, Cody, they have to play the back-to-backs like that. It's always...
Right. And this wasn't supposed to be a back-to-back. This was a makeup game.
Correct. And I think a better indicator of what the lineup is what's going to happen over the weekend. Like the weekend series, in that regard, you can take a lot from, because, yes, they have to play back-to-back-to-back, but they're built for that. They train for that. They you know what I'm saying? Like, they right. prepare for that. They prepare their bodies and their minds for those weekend series. They take it up another level for that. The midweek game, there's a little bit of a letdown, but they only usually have the one midweek game. This right. week they had two. I'm not overly concerned. Also, I know a lot of people are like, well, I'd like to see more consistency from the hitting. Game in, game out. And I know some people were critical of the hitting in the Georgia series. Okay. That'll come. They're still trying to find their way. Once again, as talented as this LSU team is, this is a team that struggled a lot last year. Okay. So you got guys coming back from injury, but they have so much depth and talent, Cody, that it doesn't matter if some of the lineup struggles. Because if Antoine Duplantis is not having a good game, Zach Watson is probably having a good game. Or Josh Smith, who's been absolutely phenomenal, you know, he's coming off that injury as well. They put in the Willis kid from Ruston, right? He had a big game. He had a big series over the weekend. Mm-hmm. They're finding it. To use a food term, the gumbo's still cooking.
Still got it.
Yeah, you understand what I'm saying? The gumbo's still on the stove, brother. It's not ready to be served just yet.
And you brought up C.J. Willis there at the end, because I was going to end this with one more question for you. I say yes to this. C.J. Willis, Friday night at the box, Texas A&M, he's starting at first base.
Yes.
That's what I think, too.
You're going to rot when it comes to that, when you got the younger players like that and they're hot, you keep putting them out there.
Play them now, yeah.
Right. You keep playing them while they're hot, because they will hit a wall and they'll get cold on you. That's what they're doing. That's what Paul's doing. And when he goes, and now if Willis stays consistent, they'll leave him out there. But once he slows down.
That's how Chris Reed ended up in the lineup. Right. In, what was it, 2015 or something like that? Wasn't supposed to play at all, and he started almost the whole season.
That's how it works.
So yeah. I like that. And it goes back to what you were saying at the beginning, leading into that, is play C.J. Willis now. Give him as many starts, at-bats as you can. As soon as he cools off, when you look towards your bench, you're still stacked there. You have guys you can go
to.
They're
so loaded. So. And you're getting these guys necessary game reps, SEC reps. Woo, that's going to pay off if you need those guys to come off the bench in a pitch hit situation in the SEC tournament, or better yet, in a regional, super regional, or, let's hope, Omaha.
We could use another double pinch hit double off the wall from C.J. Willis in a clutch situation again.
Absolutely. When we come back here on the Wrap Game with RP3, going to talk a little New Orleans Pelicans right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you like, 337-706-0111. Those highlights you heard were from the New Orleans Pelicans game last night. The Pels are inching closer and closer to securing a lottery pick. Three games to go. They fell last night to another team in the mix of trying to be in the lottery, the Charlotte Hornets.
Pels fell 115-109, and they're now 32-47 overall on this year. Julius Randle had himself a heck of a game, 34 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists, played 34 minutes. Damn, that's a lot of minutes for a guy. Ian Clark, 17 points. Some guy named S. Johnson, 17 points. I have no idea. That Stanley Johnson?
I think so.
Stanley Johnson. I'm just going to make up names
you know,
for people.
Stanley backwards is Yelnats.
Do you know one time? We have a separate discussion here. I was in junior college, and we were broadcasting our school's baseball team.
Okay.
And we broadcast their games. It was like a Saturday afternoon. No one was there. This is junior college in Central Illinois. No one's showing up for a baseball game on a Saturday at 11:30. Okay. So the visitors came, and me and my buddy were doing the broadcast. And we asked him for his lineup. He gave us his lineup, but he didn't give us his reserves. Well, the game got out of hand, so he just does mass substitutions.
Line change.
No, we went back down there again during the broadcast. One of us would run down there, like, and he got so upset. It wasn't our coach. It wasn't our school. It was the visitors.
Right.
He's like, no, you don't need that. Oh, you know, screw you guys. I said, okay, all right, I'll show you. Got up there. My buddy's like, what are we going to do? I said, I got this. I start making up names and stats right off the top
of my head. Yeah, that's exactly what
I was like,
he's got a 745 batting average on the year, 3 million home runs, and 69 RBIs.
I was like, this is Clark Griswold here. He's got 3 home runs and 18 ribbies on the season. He's also a threat on the base paths, Sean. He's got 3 stolen bases in 5 attempts. And we just did about half the game that way.
Oh, that's great. Just start naming randomly. Peter Griffin coming to the plate now.
Just shame naming on people. Name. That's what you get for not giving me your roster.
Right. And I think
I understand that you're a terrible team and that you're on the road and that you don't want to have to deal with the home team's media and that the game got so out of hand that you had to put in all your subs in the third. I get it.
I want to play for that guy.
Oh, I want to play. I don't think that guy made it through the rest of the season. But once again, the Pels are just eking along, showing effort. You know, Julius Randle's getting his minutes and getting his stats, 34-11. Okafor was out there. He played a little bit, 23 minutes.
A big reverse slam, though.
Yeah, he did have that big reverse slam.
And he video gamed him.
Yeah, that was filthy. And Okafor is a guy who's trying to play for a contract. You know, Randle will get signed, whether it's with the Pels or someone else. Julius Randle's getting himself a deal, okay? Okafor is a guy that's, you know, one of the guys kind of off the trash heap that's trying to prove that he belongs in this league, and he's done very well for the Pels. He's probably played himself in getting a contract from someone. Whether that's the Pels or someone else, Okafor is going to be on a roster.
Yeah, you can check Twitter right now and see there are stories out about Julius Okafor. He's talked about he was in a very dark place for a while after the passing of his mom and things like that. And he says he feels happy again for the first time in a long time. And that's kind of starting to reflect on the court. So maybe the Pels should take a look at this kid because the talent is undeniable, national champion, all that. But, you know, maybe now that he's getting back to a happy place, he's comfortable with himself again, he could be a force on the court.
And here's the other thing. You don't have to pay him a fortune. You're going to have a guy that wants to be there, a guy that wants to put in the work, that wants to be in New Orleans Pelicans, and you can sign him for cheap. Hey, that's a win-win, right? I mean, I think it's a win-win situation. By the way, Randle's double-double, 34-11, was his 24th game with at least 20-10 for the Pels this season. But New Orleans continues to lose and securing their spot in the draft lottery with having now lost 11 of the past 13. Kimball Walker for the Hornets had 21 points in the fourth to lift the Hornets to the dub. We'll talk more about the Pels when Andrew Lopez joins us after the break. But before we go to the break, just a reminder, friends, Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has proclaimed the month of April as Safe Digging Month in Louisiana as part of a nationwide safety awareness campaign to draw attention to the importance of safe digging. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. So if you or a contractor you hire is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or even a garden,
you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. That's why it's so important for everyone to dial 811 and call Louisiana One Call 2 days before they dig. You just tell the operator your address and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you and your contractor can avoid them. It's simple, it's free, and it's the law. All demolishers are required to notify Louisiana One Call before they begin work. The law applies to individuals as well as contractors, municipalities, and others. Failure to call can subject the person to fines and liability for damages to buried infrastructure. Call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Coming up, Andrew Lopez going to tell us more about the New Orleans Pelicans right here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time to welcome on our fourth and final guest of the show. He covers the New Orleans Pelicans for the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com. He's a pro's pro, and he agreed to wake up earlier than normal for us, which we are gratefully appreciative of. It's the one and only Andrew Lopez. Lope, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm good, man. I'm just glad I got the 8:32 slot, not the 6:32 slot.
Oh man, I appreciate you making the time for us as always, Andrew. So after last night's game, three more to go. Is that the mindset that you have with covering this team?
I can confirm or deny the fact that there were several Pelican beat writers who were walking around the arena with three fingers up last night through the bowels of the Smoothie King Center, signifying the fact that there are three games left. So, yes, I can say that I am very much looking forward to the fact that there are three games left in this season.
Andrew, let's start off three games left. So they got it's on the road. You're going to have to travel, right? It's Phoenix and Sactown before coming home next Tuesday night to wrap things up against Golden State, correct?
Yeah, I'm not going to travel, but yes, I'm going to go ahead and stay home on these guys. I don't know if covering the 32 and 47 team on the road is where we want to put our budget. My man said no.
Let's save some money here, boss man. And I don't need to go out to Phoenix and Sactown for the road trip. What's the feeling though around the team with these three games to go? Is it just, hey, let's just get to the finish line and get it over with, or is it still some optimism with these younger cats that are getting an opportunity to show what they can do? Guys like Okafor and others who are trying to show other teams that they're worthy of being on a roster. Or is it a mix?
I think it's a mix. I think it's absolutely a mix. You do have some of these older guys who are maybe a little bit done with the season, but everybody that's playing right now, for the most part, is out to try to prove something. Anthony Davis isn't playing because of his back. You look at the starting lineup right now, Elfrid Payton is playing for a contract next season. Ian Clark is playing for a contract next season. Terrence Williams is trying to prove he belongs in the NBA. Julius Randle's playing for a contract next season. More than likely, he has a player option for $9 million, which he's almost sure he's going to, opt out of and try to hit big money on the market. And Jahlil Okafor plays. He's got a team option for next season, but again, he's trying to prove something. You go to the bench. You don't really have a backup point guard. Stanley Johnson's playing for a contract. Christian Wood is playing to show that he belongs. Chuck Diallo's playing for a contract. Solomon Hill's trying to prove he belongs. So all of these things that you have going on right now with this team, you have guys who are trying to prove themselves. Tyrese Bertans, he's the other guy who hasn't been playing. He's the other guy who hasn't played the last two games. He's trying to prove he belongs. He's got $9 million guaranteed money for next year. So all of the guys who are playing are out to prove one thing or another, either that they belong in the NBA or that they're worthy of another contract or a bigger contract next season.
We're on with Andrew Lopez of the Times-Picayune and NOLA.com. He covers the New Orleans Pelicans. I'm sure you saw this, that Anthony Davis is a slightly frustrated, I guess. He flipped off a fan last night after the game while he went to the locker room. He said later on Instagram that he did so because he felt disrespected by the fan, and the fan was trying to goad him by flipping him off. So he essentially returned the favor. Any chance whatsoever with the quote-unquote back spasms that he's suffering, any chance he plays on Tuesday night in the regular season finale there inside the Smoothie King Center?
I think it's a slim chance. I thought it was a very bit of a little chance that he was going to play again anyway. This doesn't really change my thinking on it because it's one fan. You can see in that clip, it's a six-second clip. You see as soon as he flips the fan off, he high-fives like two or three more fans on his way out of the tunnel. Right. So it isn't necessarily, I think, anything directed at one particular fan or New Orleans fans in general. I think it was just that one particular fan, and whether or not that fan was slipping him off or said something to provoke him. I think we've seen in recent weeks that some fans can cross the line.
Oh yeah.
In what they say, and we don't know that part. You know, the Pelicans are off today. We don't get them until they get on the road, so we won't get a chance to talk to Anthony about this. But I'm very, very sure, very positive. I've made some calls this morning, waiting on some calls back. I'm sure we're going to get the other side of this story sooner rather than later.
With AD Lope, and look, you've been doing this a long time, covering preps and then college and now the pros. He was very much a very beloved figure there in New Orleans. I don't think this divorce is on the same level as LeBron's decision going to Miami kind of thing. It reminds me more of Dwight Howard and how things ended in Orlando. From someone who's covered it day in and day out, what has it reminded you of, and have you been surprised at all with how things have gone and how messy it's gotten?
A little bit. At first, you kind of thought that this was going to be a situation where a lot of the players maybe understood, or a lot of the fans kind of understood, hey, man, look, we get it. They didn't build the team around you like they thought they should have, and now you're here. We understand. Go ahead and get out of town. But I think many fans at that point, this is, you know, going back to August, January 28th, when he made this trade request, which I feel like January 28th is just going to be a day that I've had about so much now that I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. Like January 28th is going to be AD trade day for the rest of as long as I'm here. So he goes ahead and does something like that, and I think if they would have done it right then, if they'd have made the trade, if it wasn't a hostage situation, the way LA was kind of doing it, I think you could have seen a lot of people. You just say, you know what, AD, Pell screwed up. We wish you the best, man. Go for it. If AD would have got to the deadline and sat out the season, I think you would have had a good section of fans who said, hey, thanks for 6.5 years. We're sorry it ended this way. See you next season. But because of the way he kind of said some things, you go to how Clutch kind of handled the entire situation. It left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths, and I don't know what it's going to be like when he does return here next year. I'm sure he's going to have a lot of boos, and it got to a weird situation. It got to a weird point, and I don't think it needed to be this way. I think if they could have just as equally gone and Clutch could have said, hey, look, we did this. You know, we're not going to re-sign in the summer, trade us. And then you could have been fine this year. But it's not going to be, I think, a burning jerseys in the street kind of thing. I think we've already kind of gotten past that point. But it is a sad breakup, I guess, when you can look at it that way.
Andrew, what do the Pels, and I know there's a lot of moving pieces here, they have to hire their GM and their director of basketball ops and everything like that before they move forward on what they're going to do with Anthony Davis. For you, as someone who covers the NBA, I know fans are like, And a lot of people are like, well, we need to have two or three players. We need to, you know, talk up the Celtics, and we need to get Jason Tatum. We need Marcus Smart, and we need two first-rounders. I don't know if that's realistic, because I don't think Danny Ainge is going to try to trade for a guy that he may only have for 1 year and give up a piece like Jason Tatum in particular, who's, I think, is going to be a perennial all-star down the road. But what's the realistic thing that the Pels, regardless of who's running the front office, has to make sure to get in return for Anthony Davis?
You want a couple of picks. You do want at least a couple of picks. And if you're in the player you want back, you want somebody who can be a perennial all-NBA type player. Guy who can be in year in, year out, one of the top 15, 20 players in the league. You don't necessarily need somebody who's going to be top five. You don't necessarily need somebody who's going to be top 10. But to kind of do your rebuild, you want a top 15 to 20 player, and then a lottery pick or two, or picks that kind of turn into something. That's why I think Boston has the advantage with Tatum and the stash of picks that they're going to have this year. That's why I think, you know, L.A. is kind of on the outside looking in, because you don't know which one of those guys is going to turn into an all-NBA guy between Lonzo, Kuzma, Brandon Ingram, those kind of guys. You could always have somebody come out and do some other things. Maybe the Nets get into it. Maybe Kyrie decides he wants to go to go to Brooklyn. And, you know, he brings AD to Brooklyn, but that means, you know, you get back D'Angelo Russell and Jared Allen or something and some picks. There's always things that you can do here. But I think that the main thing you're looking for is perennial all-NBA type player. And then on top of that, you know, at least two picks. And that's without having, I mean, of course, you can have some rotational guys thrown in there. You're looking at getting a haul of at least six between players and picks, I think.
Any way they take less if they can get Zion Williamson, let's say the Knicks win the lottery and they trade AD straight up for that pick and maybe something else or another player, do you think they would go for that?
I think in that situation, what you're still doing is – you're still going to have to take back something, because if you're going to go to the Knicks, all right, if you're switching AD with the Knicks, AD for Zion, basically, you're also probably getting Kyrie. You're also probably getting Kevin Durant. So maybe you take on Dennis Smith. Maybe you take on Kevin Knox. You get a couple of those guys back, but I do think AD for Zion is kind of the pie in the sky number one option I think Pelicans fans should be open for right now.
Let me throw something else at you. And we're talking with Andrew Lopez of The Times Speaking and TheNola.com. Is this, I see guys that the Lakers didn't think were very good and parted ways with, didn't re-sign or traded away. You just mentioned one of them, Russell. He's turned into an all-star with the Brooklyn Nets and is helping them fight to get into the playoffs for a franchise that's been woefully terrible since those trades with the Boston Celtics about 5-6 years ago. He can play in this league. He's a starting point guard in this league and an all-star. I see Julius Randle leave Los Angeles and blossom in New Orleans. I bring that up, Andrew, because I know everyone thought that the Lakers were offering them garbage, and it was a one-sided trade. I will admit to that. But I've seen what Julius Randle does after being discounted by the Lakers. I've seen what Russell's done after being discounted by the front office of the Lakers. Couldn't you make the same argument for someone like Kuzman or Ingram, that they could flourish elsewhere as well and that they're just not being evaluated and mentored and developed properly there in Los Angeles?
Yeah, and I think that's a very good argument to make, because you look at what happened with D'Lo with Julius. With Russell, I think Russell needed to get out of Los Angeles. He had the incident with the cell phone and Nick Young while he was there. I think he needed to get out of L.A. and mature. Julius just needed a bigger place to shine. So it is possible if some of those guys get out, they can do some different things, especially a guy like Lonzo Ball right now who could break out of his family shadow. He's already trying to kind of break out of his family shadow a little bit in terms of, they're suing Big Ball, and he's got the Big Ball brand tattoo covered up. He could end up going to Nike or things like that. And I think once he kind of gets out of that, maybe he can kind of break out. He would be the one who I think could do it the most out of that group. But, you kind of just go with what's happening right now. And I think you kind of see it with those guys. And I don't know if those guys had maybe Ingram with the scoring, but he's got the blood clot issue. So yeah. that could be a complete back. I mean, you got to be 1,000% clear that he's going to be fine. So there's a lot of pieces to this that can still kind of go around. And, you know, and if that is the best deal on the table, I do think they take it. If there's a deal comparable to that, I think that they don't take it. I don't think Gail Benson really wants to deal with the Los Angeles Lakers in this. So we'll see how it all goes down.
Who, in your opinion, could be a wild card? I remember this last season where the Spurs got rid of Kawhi Leonard and he did not go to the preferred destination that he wanted to. He ends up in Toronto and has helped them transform, and they look like a legit team coming out of the Eastern Conference. That kind of surprised a lot of folks last season, Andrew. Is there a team that maybe we're not paying attention to that could be in the mix here that could land Anthony Davis, maybe the Clippers or someone else?
I like the idea of the Clippers, but I don't think they have enough to give up, even though they're probably going to land Kawhi Leonard this summer. I do like Brooklyn as my dark horse. If Kyrie goes there, maybe, you know, Russell and Jared Allen come to New Orleans along with a pick. The one that I'd look out for that probably has the draft capital to do it, or the players to do it, I should say, maybe the Denver Nuggets. You look at what Denver's doing. If Denver gets bounced early, despite having the best record, they may feel like they have to put somebody next to Jokic. And, you know, you could have Jokic at the 5, AD at the 4. You know, it's going to cost you a couple of good players. But maybe that's the team who kind of comes out and says, we got to go all in. And they may be the team to say, you know what, I don't care if he's not going to sign next year. We're going all in right now, and we're going to try to make this happen this year.
Andrew, we'll wrap it up with this one final question, brother. Elfrid Payton, he's played extremely well when healthy, and health has been a big issue for him all season. He's had two significant stints on the bench due to injuries, two different injuries this year. But he had the five, you know, the five triple doubles, which set a new franchise record. He also tied Chris Paul's franchise record for most triple doubles in the season. He's played very well, and I like the dynamic he brings to the team with allowing Drew to play the two spot, which is where he prefers to play. Do you believe, in your opinion, as someone who's covered this team, that Elfrid Payton is going to be a priority for the Pels, regardless who the GM is?
I believe he should be, especially playing next to Drew. Now, if they go ahead and get second in the lottery and they're able to take a guy like John Morant from Murray State, maybe not.
Right.
But I do believe that Elfrid should try to come back here and play with this team next season, no matter who the GM is. I agree with you there. He brings a unique skill set. When he is healthy, you know, he can rebound like, you know, very, very few point guards in the league. He is a guy who, when he has been healthy, has been a difference maker this year. You saw it with the five straight triple doubles. I mean, he put himself in a category with Russell Westbrook, Michael Jordan, Oscar Robertson, and Will Chamberlain. You don't get into the conversation with those four guys by mistake. You have to be pretty good to do it. So, I do think that. I mean, he was on a bargain deal this year, but I think if he can be a healthy guy going forward, I do think he's somebody that needs to be in their plans, you know, next year and beyond.
Andrew, appreciate you waking up early and making time for us, brother. Enjoy the week at home, just kind of chillaxing, and enjoy the regular season finale next Tuesday night there in the Big Blender, my friend.
All right, man, no problem.
That's Andrew Lopez, TimesPicayune, NOLA.com, joining us. We will wrap things up here on the Wrap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game after this break. Saddle up, Acadiana. The Angola Prison Rodeo is coming, and 103.7 The Game wants to give you a family four-pack of tickets to the wildest show in the South on Saturday, April the 27th. Just text the word ANGOLA to 68683. Once again, text the word ANGOLA to 68683 for your chance to win a family four-pack of tickets to the Angola Prison Rodeo later this month. Cody Schutz,
Raymond.
You have been to the Angola Prison Road, have you not? You are a veteran.
Yeah, I've been a handful of times. I've been a handful of times. It's a blast every time. I bring Kaysen, so if you have kids, 5, 6, 7, Howard, they have a blast as well. And personally, my favorite thing about the Angola Prison Rodeo, yeah, the convict poker is fun and all that. Don't get me wrong, but I love the crafts that they make. Being able to purchase some of the crafts that the inmates make, I bought probably the best bottle of hot sauce I've ever had in my entire life. I bought it at the Angola Prison Rodeo. It was a little bottle. It had like a bull's head on the front of it. It was some of the best hot sauce I have ever had. And you can't find it anywhere but the Angola Prison Rodeo.
You can get you some ashtrays made out of old license plates.
That's true.
That is cool.
It is.
Cool.
I mean,
I toured Angola. That would be a story for another.
Right. I did it as a high school junior, I think. And it was very creepy. But because they took us like into the,
Same
the
here.
Barracks or whatever it is. It's something else.
But yeah, you want to go check out the prison rodeo? We're the station that can help you out. Reminder, 7:20, we have an exclusive concert announcement that we'll have right here, 7:20 tomorrow morning on the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. Up next will be the sport of politics. After that, Dan Patrick, followed by Jim Rome, then the Jordy Holberg Show with Jordy Holberg from 2 to 4, and then the good brother Ben Love live from the tap room at River Ranch. Full 3 hours of bumper-to-bumper sports from 4 to 7 today. Y'all have a great day. Be safe out there. We'll talk to you tomorrow.